Lowell Thomas brings the news. From the White House, from the Azores, from Portland, Oregon, comes today's news, as reported by America's foremost newscaster, Lowell Thomas. And now, here's Lowell Thomas and the news.
Good evening, everybody. President Johnson puts it on the line at a news conference, accusing North Vietnam of trying to take advantage of those Paris peace talks, moving men and supplies into South Vietnam at an unprecedented rate since the U.S. partial bombing halt. Hanoi, apparently, said he, trying to see if we can be pressured to stop the bombing completely without compensatory action on their part. It won't work, said LBJ, adding that any further decisions to reduce the violence must be predicated on some similar restraint from Hanoi. That's our position, and will remain our position, said he. And so long until tomorrow.
Journalist, lecturer, author, broadcaster, and famous globetrotter Lowell Thomas was the foremost raconteur of the 20th century. His long and distinguished public career began in the wartime deserts of the Middle East and was completed in Dutchess County, New York. His archives are at Marist College in Poughkeepsie. Lowell Thomas was a man ahead of his time, the first roving newscaster. Thomas recorded that audio from a Tibetan summer festival, an expedition to Lhasa in 1949. It is one of the many recordings that he made to help raise awareness of Tibet's tenuous relationship with China. On top of that, he was a filmmaker through the 20s, a radio presenter in the 30s, an adventurer who wrote more than 50 books. He was heralded as the father of Cinerama. Born in 1892, Lowell Thomas started out as a reporter for the Chicago Evening Journal, and he had a flair for making ordinary stories very exciting. Dr. John Ansley is director of Archives and Special Collections at Marist College. He has overseen the Archives Project at Marist College, as well as their digitation, and it's a great pleasure to welcome John to the roundtable this morning. John, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Oh, thanks, Joe. I really appreciate it. Well, glad to be on with you.
First of all, I just want the audience to be aware of what you and I know, which is that John, if you don't know this about John is the most patient human being in all the world, because I think he was originally scheduled to be on the show sometime in June, and we got canceled and bumped, and we had, you know, elections and pandemics and all kinds of things. So I just thank you so much. I was immediately taken by this story. I wanted to do it justice, and I thank you so much for being patient with us and allowing us your time. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, no problem at all.
Let me begin by asking the simple question, I guess. As a journalist and a broadcaster, I learned about Lowell Thomas when I was in college, and heard many of the reports and was vaguely aware of him even prior to that. What brought his work to your radar, and ultimately how Marist came to be the recipient of this incredible archive?
Yeah, well, Lowell Thomas was a very interesting man. I think he's the most famous person anyone ever forgot. He first came to fame through his travelogue. So this travelogue was this multimedia kind of extravaganza that Lowell Thomas did with colored images and motion picture footage. And he would also do, of course, he would narrate the lecture live. And during World War I, he made T. Lawrence famous as Lawrence of Arabia. So that was his launch into the spotlight. And he never really looked back from there. He was born in Ohio and grew up in Cripple Creek, Colorado. But he and his wife moved to Pawling, New York in the late 1920s. So he really considered Dutchess County his home, and he wanted his papers to stay in the area. So after he passed away in 1981, his son, Lowell Thomas Jr., made that happen. So the family donated all of Thomas's personal papers to Marist College even though Thomas didn't teach at Marist College or go there, which is, you know, fairly typical for somebody making that kind of donation, he did become friends with the college through the really excellent communication program that Marist College had in the 70s and still has. It's still one of the biggest programs at Marist. So he became aware of the college through the interns that were coming to CVS while he was working there. And he became curious about the college and became friends with President Murray, who's still our president in Marist College. And then, of course, as I said, ultimately the papers came to be donated at the college in the late 80s. And then I came to Marist in 2000, and I've been working with the collection ever since. And it's a cool collection.
So let's talk a little bit about what you've been doing with them. The right now, a lot of the work is in the digitation, correct?
Yeah, we're trying to, well, yeah, especially now during the pandemic. I mean, we're really trying to make as much available to people online as possible, particularly our students. So, yeah, we've been doing major digitization projects. So some years back, we digitized all the images in the collection, and there are about 40,000 images in the collection. So it was a couple-year-long project to do that. And we've been continuing to try to digitize textual materials, the things that people request most often, and make those available online. So anybody with internet access can access these materials.
Give us a sense of how you envision people using this archive and what they can find out as a result of their introduction to it.
Well, it's quite a wide range of things. So it's a huge collection. There's over a million documents in the collection. As I said, 40,000 images, hundreds of hours of audio, 4,000 reels of motion picture film, and hundreds of objects. So because of that and the breadth of Thomas's career and the length of it, people can use it for just a huge range of things, which they have, which is really fantastic to see. So people have used materials for theater productions, for articles, for books, for documentaries and films. So a huge range of things. But now we're going to be digitizing all of Lil Thomas's radio news show scripts through funding that we received from the National Historical Publications and Records Commission, which is the grant funding arm of the National Archives. So that was just wonderful for us to get that grant. As you can imagine, as an archivist, I was pretty pleased to get a grant from the National Archives, from, you know, kind of the mothership of archives, so to speak. So we'll be doing a lot of meticulous work with that. So we'll just be scanning and scanning and scanning to get about 500,000 pages of radio news show scripts from 1930 to 1976 digitized and online. And we'll make those available through our database at Marist. And again, anybody can search across those that wants to. And they'll be able to do a keyword search or just browse by year if they want to. And they'll be able to search across, in this example, 50 years of history. So really just 50 years of international history of Thomas giving his news broadcast from the 30s up through the 70s.
You mentioned a few moments ago about his early career during World War I. And the connection to Lawrence of Arabia. I would love to play a clip. It's about 2 minutes long, in which Lowell Thomas tells us the story of General Allenby. Give us a sense of what was happening at this particular time.
Sure, yeah. So this clip features Lowell Thomas on his radio show, which called The Best Years, which he did after he retired from his regular news program.
NPR, and by the way.
What's that?
NPR, by the way.
Yes, that's right. Excellent. Yes.
Yes. Sorry, got to get the plug in, John. You understand.
No. I absolutely. So, as you said, Thomas is talking about General Edmund Allenby, and Allenby was one of Britain's most successful commanders during World War I, and he was in charge of the Palestine front. And he and his secret weapon, Colonel Thomas Edward Lawrence, who, as I said, was better known as Lawrence of Arabia, defeated the Turkish army in Palestine and Syria in 1917 and 1918. And Thomas met with both these men in the spring. So Thomas created hundreds of these vignettes about famous people toward the end of his career. And this is one of them from The Best Years.
Hello, everybody. This is Lowell Thomas with another in my series about people who late in life go right on working as though they are still young, as perhaps you are doing. When General Allenby took command in Egypt during World War I, he found an air of defeatism in the land of the pyramids, the British on the defensive, remaining behind the Suez Canal instead of attacking the Turks, who controlled the Sinai Peninsula, Palestine, Lebanon, and Syria. Allenby, a veteran cavalry commander at age 56, this was his first chance at an independent command, and he changed things in a hurry. Lord Kitchener, previously in Egypt on an inspection trip, said to Sir Archibald Murray, "Are you defending the canal, or is the canal defending you?" Whereupon the high command recalled Murray and sent out Allenby, who had distinguished himself on the Western Front just before that. In World War II in the Near East, as you may recall, Allenby drove the Turks from Jerusalem. In fact, he did what Richard the Lionhearted and others failed to do during the Crusades. In World War I, we, along with our allies, the British, French, and Italians, were fighting the Kaiser's Germany, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, Bulgaria, and the vast Turkish Empire, too. Allenby, at the head of the greatest cavalry army of all time, defeated the Turks. That, in turn, brought the collapse of Bulgaria, followed by the breakup of the nations that had been ruled by Emperor Franz Joseph in Vienna. Then the Kaiser fled to Holland, and it was over. Military experts at the time gave Allenby most of the credit and praised him as the foremost general of what up to then had been by far the greatest war of all time. I had the good fortune to be one of only two Americans with Allenby, the other a U.S. cavalry general, Edward Davis. It was after the fall of Jerusalem that Allenby made it possible for me to spend some time as the only observer with Lawrence in Arabia, an account of which is in my recent book, Good Evening, Everybody. In fact, I am now one of the few survivors of the World War I Palestine and Arabian campaigns, and I hope all of you who are near my age are getting as much pleasure out of life as I am. And so long until tomorrow.
And that, my friends, is a radio voice, right? I mean, that's just fantastic. That's a command, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I never get tired of hearing his voice, and those old clips are just, real treasures to hear.
So here are just some numbers for you. The collection of research materials, 1 million documents, 40,000 images, hundreds of objects, thousands of hours of audio and film footage. The collection is in Marist's archives and special collections. And as you mentioned, while COVID has slowed things down, people can have access to this, hopefully someday in person, but also online. I'm fascinated by the... We could go on for another 20 minutes and talk about what he accomplished throughout his life, but there's so many cool things. And maybe just, I was hoping in playing that clip that people would say, oh, right, he did this. You point out that he became the voice of the Fox movie tone newsreels that we so often see in archival footage.
Yeah, he was amazing. I mean, he really became ingrained in popular culture. So, I mean, he wrote over 50 books during his lifetime, countless newspaper and journal articles. He, as you said, was on Fox Movie Tone Newsreel. He was the first one to air simulcast and did the first television news broadcast right before World War II. And what I think really shows how popular he was, Parker Brothers, the company that made the board game Monopoly, created Lowell Thomas's travel game World Cruise. So you could literally go out and buy a board game about Lowell Thomas's life and adventures.
Lowell Thomas, the board game. Now, yeah. I always remember as a kid, I would go into a dry cleaner and there'd be a big sign and would say, now with Martinizing. And I never knew what Martinizing was. Also, I never knew what Cinerama was, which Lowell Thomas co-created. What is Cinerama?
Yeah, so Cinerama is kind of like the granddaddy of IMAX. So it was a big widescreen motion picture format. And Thomas got in early on that in the early 1950s. And This Is Cinerama was the first film he produced. So he really kept on with his travelogue. So it was this big adventure story, showed these wonderful clips, aerial footage, even a scene on a roller coaster, which apparently really made people feel like they were on a roller coaster. So yeah. It gave this three-dimensional kind of experience for people. So there was stadium seating, this huge louvered wide screen that really encompassed your entire field of vision. And then there was even speakers, kind of surround sound, early surround sound throughout the theater. So that movie was so popular, it actually broke all kinds of box office records in New York. Then he went on to make a couple of more films, Seven Wonders of the World and Search for Paradise.
Dr. John Ansley is Director of Archives and Special Collections at Marist College and has overseen this project of the Lowell Thomas Archives. You can find out more by going to marist.edu, marist.edu. John, I can't thank you enough for being with us this morning and for sharing and for the great work you're doing. Very nice to have you here.
Oh, thanks so much, Joe. I really appreciate it.
Be well. Thank you very much. Again, you can find out more by going to the website marist.edu. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.